On Shaw i Leopardstown, Christmas means one thing. Rossioch at its very best, where champions meet challengers and Cordia reunite. From Nullag 26th to 29th, the biggest names, August Nicopolis Far, take to one of jump racing's most iconic stages. Och, ni stoppin' on crack on shin. It's a celebration that will have the crowds igdausa long after the final race. Unwrap the magic of racing at Leopardstown Christmas Festival. Visit leopardstown.com. Nullag Hunadiv.
Off the ball. Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Charlie was just so focused. Over that first maybe 6 months, his mentality just changed and was like, I'm doing this. I'm going to make this happen. And then obviously a year and a half later, we saw what happened on Sunday.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The news round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening. This is Monday's Off the Ball. You're very welcome along. We're on your radio until 10 p.m. this evening, by which stage Manchester United will have finished playing at Molineux. We'll be keeping up to speed on everything that happens in that game between Wolves and United. The main football story tonight, though, is what Arne Slot has said over the past 10, 20 minutes or so. He has faced the media at the San Siro before Liverpool play Inter Milan away tomorrow night in the UEFA Champions League. Mo Salah is not in the squad. And as I say, Slot has just faced the media. We'll play some audio from that momentarily. Also tonight, we'll have Monday Night Rugby coming your way from 8 o'clock. It's going to be Gerry Thornley and Liam Toland with us for that. And Jonathan Wilson will be with us on the football show to talk more about Mo Salah. It is the football story of the moment. And also reflect on the game of the season, is what Aston Villa fans are calling it, from Saturday lunchtime. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Stephen Doyle is here. Hello, Stevo.
Good evening.
And Mick McCarthy. Hello, Mick.
Hey, Owen. How are you?
I'm very well. Thankfully, Mo Salah has taken the attention away from Saturday lunchtime.
God, by Saturday evening, my day of jubilee was well and truly over.
Why would Salah do this to you? This is your sort
mean-spirited,
of...
mean-spirited, I would say, you know.
Victory lap Monday has been
it is
snatched.
Funny. I did watch a programme on Sunday morning where I was ready to be angry about the focus all being on Arsenal's faltering title hopes rather than the way, and then it turned out they never even talked about it at all because the Salah thing took over and then England lost the cricket at the same time and it just, yeah, everything just went haywire and Arsenal Villa wasn't even a story anymore.
Unbelievable.
Were you watching the cricket?
Bits and pieces of it, yeah. Just keeping an eye on
it. It's just like, I love watching the Ashes, but it's just, you've got little nippers at home like myself and it's just hard to get up at all hours of the morning to watch sport when you're in that situation and I've kind of missed all. I did watch a bit on Saturday morning,
yeah,
but it was
foregone conclusion territory, which kind of takes away from it a little bit.
What's happened?
England have lost the first two test matches. The first test match was interesting, but it was over in 2 days, and then the second one lasted four days almost. But England wiped out by a far superior Australian team, and the English media are crying all kinds of disaster, and it's quite entertaining to watch.
Is it all over?
I have to say, no. It's five test series, so
thinking.
They need to win to regain the Ashes. They will need to win the next three test matches.
Yeah,
starting in Adelaide next week.
They went down to Australia with massive hopes that this could be a massive opportunity for them to finally beat Australia in how many, since the 70s that was the last time they won the Ashes in Australia. So they went down with massive hope that Bazball was going to overcome the Australians. But and the Australians were down a couple of big players going into this Ashes edition. But,
after complaining that the English media didn't give Aston Villa enough airtime, Mick McCarthy has started talking about the Ashes on his own program.
Ashes. That's Steve-O's fault.
Sorry.
No, because I think the Ashes stuff is very, very interesting.
No, it is.
But, and especially their reinvention of the game and how it looks like it's not working, and that's made the media so angry in their own way. Yeah. But it's probably not for right now, and neither probably is Aston Villa.
We will start with Mo Salah, I think, because this is a story that's been developing in the last few minutes. Steve-O, we were all glued to the TV downstairs. What can you tell us about what Arne Slot has said?
Yeah, so basically this is where we are at the moment. Mo Salah has been dropped from the Liverpool Champions League squad to face Inter. The club decided Salah would be removed from selection for a short period. The club's decision has the full backing of head coach Arne Slot, with whom Salah claimed at the weekend he has no relationship. Salah made the comments after the Premier League draw with Leeds and also accused the club of scapegoating him for poor recent results. And now, he did train with the squad today and was due to have talks with the sporting director Richard Hughes and the head coach. Slot started his pre-match press conference in the last 15 minutes. Here's a selection of what he said about his initial reaction to Salah's comments at Elland Road.
We've let him know that he's not not travelling with us. So that was the only communication that's been there from us to him. Of course, before Saturday, the two of us have spoken a lot. Sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. And then your second question was?
Do you feel that your relationship has broken down?
No, that's not the way I feel. But he has the right to feel how he feels things. I haven't felt that at all till Saturday evening, for sure. Because I think when I didn't play him anymore, usually players don't like the manager then that much, but he was very respectful to my staff members, to his teammates, and he trained really hard. So to an extent it was a surprise for me that when I heard after the game that he gave the comments he gave. But as I said, it's not the first and not the last time that when a player doesn't play, I'm not sure if he was emotional or not, but that he says something that something similar to what he did. But I think my reaction to that is also clear, and that's that he's not here with us tonight.
We'll bring you more from Arne Slot's press conference very, very shortly. As you can imagine, it was right before we were coming on air when we had to bring that in. I can tell you that he has officially left the podium now, and Alisson is now up in Milan to speak to the media. He has been asked about Mo Salah as well in the last couple of minutes, and I'll come to those comments in just a moment. But just to give you a brief summation of some of the other things that Arne Slot said today, he was asked about the conversation between himself and Mo Salah, and in terms of informing him about his omission from the Champions League squad, he said it was a very short conversation. And then he was asked if Mo Salah's played his last game for Liverpool, and he said, "I have no clue," which I think is pretty stark with regards to it being a live possibility. Because I wasn't sure. Like, Mo Salah comes out last November and says, "I'm more out than in." And there's a little bit of a boy who cried wolf about it in terms of what I was thinking. And I was thinking, is he being a little bit dramatic that Brighton could be his last game? Is he just trying to kind of overblow the situation and he'll be back in January, February and everything will be fine? Maybe he'll leave in the summertime on much better terms. But after listening to Slot tonight, it now feels that that is a live possibility.
Just quickly there, because he did say, it's kind of confusing in a way, because he was asked about a possible return for Salah and he says, "I'm a firm believer that there's always a return for a player. His reaction to being told he was not going today, it was a short one." And then he followed up with what you said. "As he played his last game for Liverpool, I've no clue. I cannot answer this question in this time."
And he wouldn't comment on the Brighton game. He said, "It's been a short window between the full-time whistle in Elland Road and me facing you today. I haven't decided anything about Brighton this weekend." So we'll see how things move in the next couple of days. What's really interesting is that the decision to remove Mo Salah from the squad before this game is a Liverpool hierarchy decision. It's not just an Arne Slot decision.
Slot agrees with or backs, I suppose.
That was specified in the announcement today. It was that this is a club decision that Arne Slot supports. And it comes back to the structuring of the Liverpool coaches and stuff. He is a head coach and you've got a sporting director above him. It's almost a bit like the American model, where you've got the general manager. And look, maybe we might get a chance to talk about this a bit more, but Richard Hughes here, I think, is becoming an issue at Liverpool. And I think...
What makes you say that?
Well, he was the one, his first big appointment was Arne Slot. I was interestingly reading a piece by Jonathan Norcroft that he wrote in the Sunday Times in January, and he spoke about their first meeting, and he went to Arne Slot and they met in Zvolle, where he has a mansion, and he had a 60-page dossier on Slot that he presented him with, and he basically told Slot, "We want you as a coach because you make players better. That's what your whole..." I suppose your X factor is similar maybe to Jurgen Klopp. That kind of goes against what happens then in the summer transfer window, where they go and spend £500 million on three massive players. Like, it's not like where Slot, where you had Liverpool signing players like Roberto Firmino, Sadio Mane, Jeannie Wijnaldum, Andy Robertson, players people are kind of going, "Why are they signing these players?" Well, they signed these players because they felt that these players could achieve better things if they were coached the right way, which Jurgen Klopp did really, really successfully. He did the same with Mo Salah, because Mo Salah, you know, hadn't been doing the things that he did with Liverpool previously, with Chelsea and with Basel. He was good with Basel. There just seems to be, I just think this is a massive disorganisation at Liverpool. And Richard Hughes, this is his first big, big job as a sporting director. Like Arne Slot, is he the right manager for Liverpool? Look, he went in, won the Premier League title. Johnny Huitinga then goes at the end of the season. He seems to be getting a lot of praise for what he did last season and being that bridge between the players and the coach. Then he's taken out of the picture and it all seems to fall apart. You'd also have to question why the club allowed Mo Salah to give the interview on Saturday. He was an unused sub. He never gives interviews after matches. The last time he gave an interview was in November when he wanted to get something out about his contracts not being sorted out.
We can't stop a player in the mix zone, really, can you?
Well,
like you can see the press officer in one of the angles.
He was there.
He's there with his head in his hands. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's launching grenades.
Surely he can go in and stop and say, look, you know...
How would that look on behalf of the club?
How does it look anyway?
This is the thing. This is all.
Then you ring up James Pearce. I don't know if James Pearce is his go-to journalist.
Well,
he rings up Fabrizio Romano.
Klopp wasn't a fan, was he? So,
you get that message out somewhere. I think stopping him in the mix zone would have been a bad.
Yeah.
You'll get your message out. It'll be Instagram statement.
Do you not think though that like so? You asked me about this yesterday morning. I'm going to say look. I was on Salah's side all the way through last season and I thought the way, you know, that it was a no-brainer to sign him up. He wasn't asking for, he's asking for an astonishing amount, but he had earned that and I thought a far more straightforward decision than the club had made it out to be. And he was probably within his rights to play it out in public a little bit because that ultimately was the factor in getting it done. I thought Saturday night is an out of order way to do things, and actually that's one of the things Slot gets a little bit more honest as that goes on, and he is asked at one stage like, does he have the right to complain? He has the right to complain, he doesn't have the right to say it to the press, like, and it was quite the most straightforward answer he gave, and they've obviously punished him for it. Could they have downplayed this slightly?
Who, the club?
Liverpool. Yeah, like, is this something that needed a nuclear option and needed a big statement today about him not travelling and not being part of the squad? And you know, like, I just wonder, is Salah coming from more than just being left out of the team? Why was he not brought on against Leeds?
But you see,
I don't mind him being left out of the team. I think it was probably time to try it a little bit without him. But they were winning
3-2.
They were winning 3-2 late in the game. They were 2-2 at around the time when you'd say we could probably do with a bit of Mo Salah here. And you know, he's always scored against Leeds. Like, it's one of those, like, it's one of the lower teams of Premier League that you would still think Mo Salah would find a bit of space against. It didn't make any football sense not to even bring him on. So therefore, what's actually at play here? The club made a signing that was kind of against their, you would think, given how long it took them to do, it was probably against their better judgment.
But
probably under fan pressure. It was a contract that's like 2 years of someone that they probably thought was in decline, or certainly think so this year. And how do we get out of that? Mm-hmm. And now there's a massive disciplinary issue. There's a chasm between player and club.
So what do you suggest they would have done? Well, how could they have managed this better, the club?
I don't know. Did we need to leave
him in the squad?
I don't know, really. But I kind of feel like statements and everything like that. Is this not like, this is an internal matter that will be dealt with between Mo and the club? Or, you know, and that's your statement. You don't really say any more than that, because like, this is just it's not as if he said anything that was like total, like, needs like FA punishment.
It's not an internal matter once Mo Salah stops in the mix zone.
How we deal with it is an internal matter.
Well, the comments that he made,
I feel like they poured fire on it.
The comments that he made,
gas on it,
did undermine Slot, because at the same time Slot's given his press conference and kind of downplaying Salah's omission from the team for the last three games. At the same time, Salah's speaking to journalists saying that, I have no relationship with this guy, we haven't spoken. And yet, like, it's completely contradicting what Slot is saying. So it makes Slot look really bad. So in that sense, because he's a club employee, Salah, like, they've got to discipline him.
Where do you two stand on whether a player, like a legendary star player, deserves special treatment? I don't mean being left in the team, but if you're Mo Salah and you're going to be dropped all of a sudden, having not really been dropped for 8 years or whatever at Liverpool, do you think he deserves to be called into the manager's room, like to the office, and have a conversation about how things are going this season, and we're going to try a diamond, and to be honest, at the moment I need to see how this team operates without you?
Yes.
And that doesn't seem to have happened.
No,
and I think that's established that hasn't happened. Now I think that might be as much to do with Arne Slot and his methodology and his Dutchness. To be stereotypical about it, but that's how it comes across to me.
I don't
he is just no interest can't have those conversations, doesn't want to have those conversations. I think that's part of being a manager, to be honest, is doing that and keeping someone like Mo Salah on board.
Like I was listening to Andy Cole this morning on one of the BBC podcasts, and he just wouldn't accept the perceived wisdom that Mo Salah is completely out of line here, which I thought, which you clearly thought, which I'm sure you thought, Steve-O, when he comes out on Saturday.
Thinking it less and less, though.
Yeah, that's the thing with me as well. And like when I first heard Cole said it, I was like, what are you talking about? But as the day's gone on, I'm like, do we need to hear Salah out here a little bit? Like, are we saying it's 100% his fault? Sure, he deserves, 80-90% of the blame here, the way in which he's carried himself, especially in the mix zone after Elland Road is pretty poor. But also, what's led to this moment? I don't think it is just being dropped. I think it's how it was communicated to him. And also the facts, that it's been, what is it, 3 games in a row where he hasn't played?
On your sub,
exactly.
And I would also question, is Mo Salah a bigger problem to the Liverpool team currently than Cody Gakpo?
Sort of the first game he gets...
Never misses a minute, even.
So the first game he gets dropped for is, West Ham? Mm-hmm. And they win that game. So you're like, okay, great, there's the problem. But then the second game is against Sunderland, and it's like, oh wait, maybe Mo Salah's not the problem.
Should have lost.
And then the third game is against Leeds. It's like, actually, Salah's not here again, and they haven't lost. Well, and maybe Salah's not the problem. So I can actually understand a little bit of it. Granted, it's Monday, 48 hours on, so we've got to the stage now where we've gone on this journey where we're trying to understand him a little bit more. My instinct, my reflex to this on Saturday was not what I'm saying right now.
Me too.
But on Monday evening, I'm starting to think, do we need to listen a little bit more to what he said, or maybe try and find out a little bit more about what he's experienced.
Yeah, and sorry, Owen, it does go back to Richard Hughes again, because the issue with Liverpool isn't the attacking players. Really, look, they still haven't gelled properly, but they're still scoring goals. The issue is the centre-backs. And Mark Gehi was in a hotel with his family on transfer deadline day waiting to sign for Liverpool. And he could have signed early in the summer, but they were arguing over £5 million. That's Richard Hughes' job. It's his job to get that deal done and get him into the squad. And then they sign a young Italian defender, 18 years of age, from Parma. He gets injured. That's bad luck. But he wasn't going to be the backup centre-half to Ibrahima Konaté and to Virgil van Dijk. And the other thing is the contract of Ibrahima Konaté. He is a brilliant centre-back. We've all seen him playing brilliantly. We saw him in the Aviva Stadium playing for France against Ireland. He's a brilliant centre-half. But his form has gone totally off a cliff this season, and I think he's been totally distracted by this Real Madrid situation. We're led to believe that he's in a similar situation to Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's trying to run down his contract to go to Real Madrid on a free next year. So it was up to Richard Hughes to go to Konaté last year and say, here's a contract, we want you to sign this. If he doesn't sign it, well, then you're kind of going, well, then there's an issue, because have Real Madrid nobbled this player as well? And if they can't get him to sign the contract, they have to send him out on loan, because you can't have that same situation that happened with Alexander-Arnold, that circus that we saw last season. And I said again, it goes back to Richard Hughes. These are his jobs.
But do you think Liverpool have decided, right, that's it, this is an out, regardless of whether they orchestrated it in the first place, that's with dropping him? If the Saudi money doesn't come in January, which I think they're backing, what do they do? Are they going to freeze Mo Salah out for a year and a half his contract? You're not going to get a European team picking up that kind of contract.
Well, one thing that we know for sure is that Mo Salah is leaving Liverpool in the next 7 months. It has to be next summer
I
should say he came off the bench against Sunderland. He did start that game on the bench, but did come off the bench on that occasion, and then unused sub against West Ham United, and then an unused sub against Leeds United as well. Should we play the rest of slot? Actually, there is some of the second half of this. So this is part of the press conference that went out after we came on air this evening. The last few questions about Mo Salah posed to Arne Slot.
Mo said that he felt he was thrown under the bus. Do you understand that frustration? Do you understand why he would say such things?
Then I should know what he exactly means with it. So, and that is difficult for me to know what he exactly means with it, and why he says this, and who he's referring to. And
so, you've not had that conversation?
No, not what he meant with those words. No, we just. So I think
Usually I'm calm and polite, but that doesn't mean I'm weak. So if a player says, have these commands about so many things, then it's about me, us as a club to react. And we reacted in a way you can see now that he's not here. Is it about me not playing him? Yeah, then the answer could be, what could I have done differently playing him? But maybe that's not the reason why he thinks and feels this way. And he has every right to feel what he feels, but he doesn't have the right to share it with the media. He has that right, but then it's up to us to react on it.
Salah mentioned that his relationship with you had broken. Are you on speaking terms?
Yes, we were. Yeah. But it doesn't mean we were always agreeing on things, but we... I spoke to him twice in the week before, in the 2 days before Leeds.
Have you spoken to him since Leeds?
No. I already said that a few times. Yeah, he was on the training ground today and I told him that he didn't travel, yeah. But that's not speaking to someone, in my opinion. Yeah, that is speaking to someone, but it's not having a conversation in your room. But I had that twice in the lead up towards Leeds, one a little bit longer and one a bit shorter, but I'm not going to go into the details. Is that's going to be the next question? But
sorry, just to clarify, you mean when you say you spoke, it was just to the group and he was there? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not specifically. Like,
yeah, I communicated towards him that he wasn't traveling.
Ah, okay. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah. I was making sure. I had just heard that on the way up to the studio. And I wasn't 100% sure if I got that right, but I think that's massive. Like, again, that goes back to what I was saying about before he was left out of the team. His punishment of not being in the inter-squad isn't even communicated to him. It's just like, here, Mo, you're not in the squad because of what you did. It's a real kind of like, show you up in front of the crew sort of style of management. You know, it's not to even say it's wrong. I just think it's important.
Loads of reaction to this, as you can imagine. 0879 180 180 is our number. Nigel Gallagher has been in touch to say Mo Salah and his agent use the media when it suits them when angling for a move or a new contract. I'd say it was premeditated. Slot has to prepare for a future without Salah. Salah wants either a move or a future without Slot, and a manager that builds a system around him. Look, Nigel, you're 100% bang on there. When he stops in the mix zone, you know something's about to go down, and you know that Mo Salah's going to try and serve Mo Salah. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily automatically equals that he's immediately wrong about everything.
It's not new.
And also, you don't owe, like, I mean, I, as a journalist, I feel precious about these things, but like, we are owed nothing in that mix zone. You've stood in that mix zone after plenty Premier League games, Steve-O. The players don't owe you anything.
If nothing's happening, you're only getting Virgil van Dijk. No, it's important, though, that to say that, like, Mo Salah used the media. Like, you say that as if it's some sort of mortal crime. Think of Eamon Dunphy's Ron Little rant, right? What's a big part of that conversation? They have an argument about Roy Keane using the media to get a new contract and Dunphy's firing back that Vieira is doing the same thing at Arsenal. Mm. Yeah. This is just what players do, you know?
Yeah. Dermot Keenan said he came on at halftime against Sunderland and had zero impact whatsoever, so Slot used other options against Leeds. Slot could have dropped him ages ago, but gave him the chance to find form. Plus, he knows Salah's gone for ages with the AFCON, so needs to find a formation to suit the new players. That's a good point. Ekitike should feel the most aggrieved, as he was excellent on Saturday. And also elsewhere in Slot's press conference today, I think it was unprompted, he brought up the formation and talking about a diamond in midfield. We'll speak to Jonathan Wilson later on about, you know, the tactical implications at Liverpool at the moment. And maybe there's a tactical reason why Salah's not in Slot's current plans. Maybe he's just looking at a different style of play. And it certainly seems that that's what Slot's saying as well today. All in the Game says, yeah, that conversation should have happened between Slot and Salah. It's not a young academy player he's dropping. At the minimum, Slot should have had a decent conversation with Salah before doing what he did. Dermot Keenan again says, just watching Slot's press conference live, and they had to tell the press no more questions about Mo Salah and ask questions about the match against Inter. I mean, we did go deep on the Liverpool press conference earlier. I can tell you that the holding music on the Liverpool YouTube page before press conference starts is an absolute banger. They've gone for a brilliant house track on it, and I'm a big fan of Liverpool on YouTube right now. Also, the empty chair on Sky Sports News.
Oh my God, that's how you knew it was a big press conference. They went live to an Inter Milan letter, branded letter chair on one stage, waiting for Slot to sit in it.
John says that lads, Arne Slot has lost the changing room, the game's up for him. And Patrick says, Arsenal have a shocking result. City and Villa are now within striking distance, but Liverpool are still the story of the weekend. How bad can the season get?
I'll tell you what can happen though. Manchester United can go and lose to Wolves today and take it all back.
Right, we will bring you the team news from Molyneux and the rest of the day's stories. And we will, of course, let Mick do his victory lap at some stage this evening after the break.
On Shaw in Leopardstown, Christmas means one thing. Rossiach at its very best, where champions meet challengers and Cordia reunite. From Nullag 26th to 29th, the biggest names, August Nicopolis Far, take to one of jump racing's most iconic stages. Och, ni stoppin' on crack on shin. It's a celebration that will have the crowds igdausa long after the final race. Unwrap the magic of racing at Leopardstown Christmas Festival. Visit leopardstown.com. Nullag Honadiev.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
The Imro Award-winning sports program.
Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. It's Owen, Mick and Steve-O here in studio. And Steve-O, it's time to continue the news round with the rest of today's football news.
Yes, indeed, Owen. Of course, there is a big game on tonight in the Premier League, finishing off this weekend's round of fixtures. Manchester United away to the Premier League's bottom team, looking to turn their form around. Wolves entertaining United side that has won just one game in their last five matches, of course, drawing last Thursday with West Ham at Old Trafford, just days after that home defeat to 10-man Everton. And Wolves have beaten United home and away in their last two Premier League meetings, but they've had a disastrous start to this season, winless after 14 matches, anchored to the bottom of the table. Rob Edwards taking charge for just the fourth time of this Wolves team. No big team change of note in that Wolves side. Sam Johnson, of course, playing in goal, the former United Academy player will no doubtably put on the performance of a lifetime tonight against United, who just show one change from that game against West Ham. Mason Mount comes into the attack. He's leading the line there ahead of Cunha and Mbeumo. Dalot and Diallo, the two wing-backs. Casemiro and Fernandes in midfield. Shaw, Heaven and Mazraoui, the back three, with Lomans in goal for United. That game kicking off at 8 o'clock. Just an interesting story here about the drinks breaks at the World Cup. Or sorry, I should give you the FA Cup third round draw before we go into that one. Let's see the ties of note. Wolves at home to Shrewsbury Town. Aston Villa are going to be away to Tottenham Hotspur. What a draw for the villains there.
Premier League team every year without fail.
Wrexham will be hosting Nottingham Forest. Chelsea away to Charlton Athletic. Man City at home to Exeter City. West Ham will be hosting Queen's Park Rangers in their game. Brentford, Keith Andrews, Brentford going to Sheffield Wednesday. Fulham will be at home to Middlesbrough. It's Everton Sunderland in an all Premier League tie. Liverpool will host Barnsley in the third round. Arsenal are going away to Portsmouth. Leeds United will travel to Derby County. And what else have we got there? Newcastle United hosting Bournemouth, another old Premier League tie. Crystal Palace, the holders, are going to be away to Macclesfield, and the aforementioned Manchester United hosting Brighton. So plenty of old Premier League ties in that FA Cup third round next month.
83 final, of course, Steve.
Indeed, Michael, for some of the older listeners there. The World Cup next year, we're going to have quarters, I suppose, in honour of our American hosts. Every 2026 World Cup game will pause for 3 minutes to allow for a hydration break. The new measure, which will essentially split matches into quarters, was discussed at meetings with coaches and broadcasters at the weekend. The proposal received significant support from all parties, including FIFA's medical team.
I'm going to need it in Mexico City.
Ad breaks, I wonder. Yeah, well, Ireland, they're going to be playing like 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So
Irish time, yeah,
which is pretty late, even Mexican time. Like, it's a very late kickoff time for even locally. So hopefully it'll be a bit cooler, at least, seeing that we're all going to have to get up and
I was like
bleary-eyed. When Ireland definitely qualified, now that we've all marked that off.
It's
I was like 14, 15 for USA 94, and it was quite a novelty getting up at the early hours of the morning to watch matches. But when you've got responsibilities as an older man.
Did we have any late games, though? USA 94.
There was a couple of matches around 1 o'clock in the morning, I think. Ireland. I'm not talking about the early games.
Yeah, no, there were some games.
But there were some matches that you'd have to get up in the early hours for, yeah.
I think all responsibility goes out the window if Ireland win their playoffs in March.
Ah, of course, yeah.
Like everything. Like it is on a giant stadium level if Ireland do qualify. That fixture against Mexico in particular.
Yeah.
Like Ireland versus Mexico at Azteca.
Azteca,
regardless of what happens, it is just unbelievable. Like absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I'm so excited about this thing that might not happen.
I don't want to get excited. I actually got giddy there for a second watching your giddiness. We've two matches to win before we get there.
It's not even the memories you make along the way. It's the imagination about the memories and making things up in your own head that this might actually happen.
Will what the man in the yellow hat return?
What's that?
Will the man in the yellow hat return that game, you know?
Nathan Collins with the peak cap down in the Azteca. Poor Elheimer Hallgrímsson, like whatever with the Irish players, he's from Iceland.
He will melt.
Oh my goodness. What's he going to do?
Will we get out of this group, Steve-O? This group that we're definitely going to be in?
Look, you know, listen, all I'll say is we're going to have months and months now of no great shakes chat in relation to our three opponents. Yeah.
We haven't a great shake to face between now and the second round.
It's amazing, really. It's
like South Africa aren't... You know, like we're South Africa, great team, but like South Korea is they're always going to be a good side, and Mexico are the like the last 16. They've never got past the last 16, but they're going to be home. They're the hosts. They're going to have a huge home support, and they're going to be playing in the kind of weather that they're used to. So I we're not going to have a hope against them, really, are we?
Imagine, I'm like, at least we don't have the situation that Northern Ireland have, where they've got this unbelievably tough draw into the World Cup, and then they've got a much easier draw at the World Cup. So they're looking at Canada, Qatar, Switzerland, and they're like, what a draw it would be if we could only qualify for that World
Cup. What a draw it is for Italy, conveniently, yeah. I love that every there's a revenge mission in every game. So we have like Mexico, who beat us in USA 94, and we have, you know, South Korea, who we should have played in the quarterfinal in 2002 and definitely would have beat them. And then we have South Africa, who, you know,
Eben Etzebeth.
We have a problem with the final sport.
Yeah.
Steve Clark against Carlo Ancelotti. Unbelievable. Man. Brazil, Scotland.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Shades of 98.
That is the group. There's a lot of very, very entertaining groups, which hopefully we won't be watching as neutrals come next summer. You're going to move on to rugby, Steve-O?
Yeah, because a decision will be made on the availability of Jack O'Donoghue and Jack Crowley later this week. Munster hoping they'll be available for Saturday's Champions Cup clash against Gloucester at Páirc Cuíve. Michael Milne and Finian Witcherly are also being monitored following last Saturday's loss to Bath. Andrew Smith has made a return to training after sustaining knee and hamstring injuries against Leinster at Croke Park in October. Bath beat Munster 40 points to 14 at the weekend. And Matt Williams gave his thoughts on the game to the lads on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning.
You get picked for your country when you go away from home to a hard place and you stand up and you show what you can do. You don't do it by beating the Dragons at home. That's not Test match rugby, and that's not showing you're capable of playing Test match rugby. It's going to the really hard joints and showing your character and showing you're capable of playing at the elite end. And unfortunately, Munster got shown up. And because, as Alan said, they still got a long way to go. Now, I'm not criticising the players, because I think this Munster team has a lot of potential, and I think they can go a long way. I think they will grow. But I think that just calms everyone who's talking about it. And here's the other part. If you can damage players by putting them in too early, you can really damage players. And that Munster pack, if they go away and they say, righto, we got beat up, that's not happening again.
So this is around the Ireland conversation, obviously, the fact that there should be more Munster players in the Ireland squad, and that's been disproved by Bath, I suspect, is the context of that conversation.
It just... Look, I usually kind of agree with Matt, and I see where he's coming from here. I just think it's not a like-for-like conversation. It's like Munster as a team have a long way to go, and I think we're, you know, without... Probably we actually, you said to me, who's the most important player on any Irish team last week on the show? You said it's Tadhg Byrne. I said it could be Jack Crowley, and it was before I knew he was injured this week. It's like, it's a big loss to Munster. It's a big, like, JJ Hanrahan, I thought, played well, but it's a big drop down. But at the same time, I think the general point is right. Munster have a long way to go to be consistently at the top table. Now, they haven't just beaten the Dragons at home. They did beat Leinster and Croke Park this year and beat them well, and they've had good results. But I think the general Irish talk is, I think that's too simplistic. Like, Munster don't have the team that Leinster have. They don't have 15, 20 international level players. They have less than that. But that, like, the performances of Munster players who are good enough for Ireland, you know, how Munster do as an overall thing is incumbent on them, but also the players that aren't good enough.
you know, nobody's saying that they're as good like that. Like a representative team should be picking the best players collectively. It's not an idea of like, well, Leinster have the most good players and they're the best team, so we'll just pick the Leinster team and they'll represent Ireland. And that's how we'll go. You know, like, I just don't get it. I really don't. I think everybody knows that Munster are carrying a few players still that maybe need to get to that next level. But that doesn't mean that the ones that are shining for them aren't good enough for Ireland. I don't see the connection. I actually don't see the connection.
What did he make of this on Saturday?
It was very disappointing.
Bizarre first half, like in a sort of very grim way.
Yeah.
And like this could have been a real annihilation on the scoreboard. And I'm not sure why that didn't happen. Maybe it's like it's simple as this, that like when Ty Burns are on the pitch for Munster, they are unbelievably vulnerable and also down to 14 men for that 10-minute period. And actually, when they have them on the pitch and it's 15v15 in those conditions, it was just one of those games that was never going to break one way or the other. Now, to be fair,
I
think they lost the game 15v15 as well by a margin.
I would say it's more to do with the fact that the game was over after 15 minutes and, you know, they capitulated, and I think everything after that is somewhat irrelevant. If you're looking to see what Munster would be able to do in a closer environment, I thought some of their attacking play was incredibly pedestrian, even outside of like some set piece issues and so on. Like, I thought they're moving the ball across the back line was so easily defended. I thought the kicking was poor. I'd just be really, really, I suppose, just sort of like downhearted, because I thought they looked a mile off it. They looked a mile off it in every facet, you know. So I know that they ultimately kind of had a close game from minutes 20 to 80 somewhat, but Bath had the game won. You know, their effort was done for the night at that point.
I still think there's a La Rochelle-esque performance in this team at the back end of the year, but because you lost your first game, obviously the deck is stacked against you in terms of trying to get a home quarter final at this point, or a home knockout game at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't be ruling anything out or ruling, like, you know, dismissing the year. Like, it's not one of those things. If Munster go on a run now and it's like, oh, you said they were way off. Just talking about what happened on Saturday night, it was very disappointing.
And it's early days for Clayton McMillan as well, isn't it? Like, this is all kind of, it's developing, isn't it? It's, you know, he and his players are going to learn from defeats like this.
The injury list is not helping. Feels
Bath,
like
they Bath deja are great vu. As well.
The Bath are absolutely excellent.
Like, that's important. They could win this tournament. Like,
potentially, probably second best halfback pairing in the competition after Toulouse. Potentially, certainly. I mean, like, we could maybe overreact to how brilliant they were given Munster and their injuries and the two late pull ups before the game as well, and also the situation in the first 9 minutes of the game. So maybe we could give them a bit too much credit, but they did look magnificent.
Yeah, and they did win the Premiership, and I think every competition they were in last year, and they're dominating so far this year as well. So I think, like, the, you know, maybe they let Johan van Graan go a little too soon.
Where are we going next, Tivo?
Yeah, just on Leinster, James Lowe has been past fit for their match away to Leicester on Friday. Jordan Larmour has been ruled out with a hamstring injury. Orji Snyman is a doubt with a shoulder issue, while Gary Ringrose, who came off a cramp in their match against Harlequins, is also suffering with a knock and is a doubt. Will Connors back training after recovering from an arm injury that kept him out for 6 weeks, and he may be available for the European tie. Connacht, of course, playing yesterday in the Challenge Cup. They led a 21-point lead slip to suffer defeat. They could only hold on the visitors couldn't hold on to lose 24-21 to the Ospreys. Connacht went down to 13 players in the second half, allowing the hosts to come back.
Very good. What's next?
Yeah, on motor racing, Alex Dunn will be racing in Formula 2 next year. The Offaly teenager confirmed he will remain with Rodin Motorsport for a second season. Dunn landed 2 race wins and 8 podiums over the course of his rookie campaign to finish 5th in the championship standings. And meanwhile, Lando Norris became Britain's 11th Formula 1 world champion after finishing 3rd at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Max Verstappen won the season-ending race, but it wasn't enough to successfully defend his title.
It was one of those ones that was both exciting and an anti-climax at the same time. It did feel as though once they got through maybe the second pit stop, there was kind of nothing going to stop it being 1-2-3 in the order it would have to be for Norris to go and win the World Championship. But it's funny, like, they did, like, if it was one race longer, Verstappen would have won from it being an insurmountable thing, like, only in the summer. It was completely gone. Like, this was McLaren's all the way. So they get it, but I don't know, how much credit do you get when you limp over the line or just fall at the, you know, just get there by the bare minimum. I don't know. They seem to be enjoying it in the celebrations anyway, I have to say. Yeah. Lando Norris's mum was the absolute star of the celebrations, I have to say.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, big crier.
Right, okay.
You know, yeah, very emotional. Nice moment.
It did seem that Verstappen was the one of the happier people around the place yesterday. I know he's won the race and all that, but yeah, certainly when you're kind of being predictive for next season and who's actually taking the most out of the run-in, it feels that he's come away with a lot of credit in the bank and is he was pretty happy in everything that he said yesterday evening. You're moving on to the GAA?
Yep, because we've got Dublin Kerry head-to-head on in the All-Ireland Club Football semi-finals next month. Dingle, of course, crowned Munster champions yesterday and will now face the 2015 All-Ireland winners Ballyboden St Denda's in the semi-finals. Kilcoon Scotstown will play their Ulster final next week with the winner facing St Bridget's in the other semi. Conor Gainey was the hero for Dingle as they were crowned Munster football champions. They won their first title at the grade by beating St Finbar's of Cork by a single point. Gainey scored 4 points overall. His last gasp two-pointer proving the difference in the end. AFL star Mark O'Connor is looking like he's going to remain in Australia. He's back there now, or returning there after their win yesterday. He spoke to our own Tommy Rooney after the famous win.
I think it was just staying calm and the leg kicked, as you say, like an iconic outside of the boot two-pointer that didn't go our way. But look, I suppose we have a bit more experience now from the last few years. I can't believe we're missing a slip.
I'm going to let you go. You're going to go run after that. Right, you're heading home, aren't you?
I'm heading back
to Australia.
Yeah, back,
you've been home. So. You've done well. You've cleaned up.
Yeah, he certainly did.
Cleaned up.
I have to say, I was on the club beat for many years. They're the hardest interviews sometimes to do, those club post matches, because you don't want to take them away from the celebrations. And you could see Mark was talking to Tommy there and realised, oh, hang on a minute, I'm missing the cup lift here. But anyway, yeah, fair play to him. It was confirmed by the manager yesterday that it's looking unlikely he won't be around for the semi-finals in January.
I wonder how Geelong feel about him his entire off-season playing high-level sport.
Well, they apparently, game by game, they've had to get permission from Geelong just to say that it's okay that he plays.
They're probably being nice about it, but I wouldn't say they're delighted.
From what I understand, maybe he's not the only person who's gone back to Australia as well. Apparently, the goalkeeper for Dingle could be missing for the semi-final as well. I was surprised he played yesterday, Mark O'Connor, and I had the same thought as you. He's going up for a high ball against Brian Hayes yesterday, and I thought, this is not how you're supposed to be behaving in the off-season. It's supposed to be feet up on the beach, slowly getting yourself ready for pre-season, which begins today, apparently.
Okay.
So he's definitely gone. I mean, it would take quite a story that's given to your employer if they were to allow him to come back next month. So I'd say that the Mark O'Connor thing is done. But this was an absolutely extraordinary game yesterday afternoon in Thurles. Stephen Sherlock, who didn't play this year for Cork, who is coming back next year, just put on an absolute clinic. He was unbelievable. He scored 16 points in the game. It's an absolute joke. I think Dingle tried three different men on him. And the story was that Stephen Sherlock powers St Finbar's to Munster glory, and they're going to be up against Ballyboden next year. And then one moment that St Finbar's will never forget, and that, to be fair, Dingle will never forget either, one of the biggest refereeing decisions of the year. I mean, the rules are the rules. The referee deemed there to be a situation where the Finbar's man held up the Dingle man, didn't want to give the ball back. And there's a reflex there that referees have been giving that free all throughout their careers. The reflex is the same. The rule is now different. It now becomes, a 50-yard free. Doesn't really matter. Comes just outside the two-point line, and then it's up to Conor Gainey to put it over the bar to win the game for Dingle in that instance. Unbelievably dramatic. Finbar is probably the better team. The better team probably lost on the day, but it was just an absolutely extraordinary conclusion to what was a brilliant, brilliant game.
It's hard when something like that decides the game, because I think ultimately giving the ball back to the player, I always thought was a bad wording of that rule, but ultimately the stopping cynical delaying is a good process. But it's almost too big a punishment to be the last kick of the game. Especially when it's like, you know, we're still not used to two-pointers being a thing. You know, it's still very early in that story. So suddenly it's like, you know, you go from being a point up to a point down because of a free given away. You know, you give away a free, like in your own 45.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's a big old punishment. Like, and it's not to say that anybody did anything wrong either.
No, like the referee can't be thinking about the consequences when he's giving a free like that.
Of course not, no. That would be worse.
That would be worse. However, if common sense, if there was a pause and everybody came together for a bit of common sense, maybe they would all agree, listen, take your free from where the original infraction was. You've got 20 seconds to find your equaliser or your winner from open play. But look, he just applied the letter of the law and he thought it was a foul and he thought it was being held up. So that's the way it went. But unbelievable stuff.
Shall we listen to Jimmy Barry Murphy on that decision? He did speak to our own Tommy Rooney yesterday as well. Jimmy Barry Murphy, the manager of St Finbar's.
Jimmy Barry Murphy, that is, after such a great game of football and an exhibition from Finbar's in lots of ways, such a cruel way to lose a Munster final at the end of the game.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes. Big games are decided on very crucial decisions at important times, but today's Dingle's day. They found a way back into the game when we looked to be in control. And I honestly thought today was some of the best football we played all the year. The only thing you could say probably in the last 10 minutes, we didn't manage the game probably as well as we could have with the possession we had. And that gave them an opportunity then to get back down and get the score that decided the whole game. But as I said already, we had a great year, but today's Dingle's year, in fairness.
Yeah, unbelievably classy from JBM.
I just think like that is one of the most magnanimous kind of interviews I've ever given in my life. And even to be, say, not even just say, us Dingle say we can't talk about it, but even to say, look, you know, we could have done more in the last 10 minutes. So few people have that perspective. I would have not, it would take me 2.5 years to find that perspective on a game like that, even if the referee was completely right. I just think it's such a hard way to be. And like, there isn't a bone in that man's body that isn't gentlemanly.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. I don't want to slip on your Kerry toes here now, but I'm told by a close family friend that the Festival of the Wren down on St. Stephen's Day in Dingle is going to be wild. They're going to have the Kerry County Cup. They're going to have the Munster Cup down there. It's going to be the place to be.
And Sam, potentially, who knows? I'd say so. Will they be reining it in a little bit? Because it'll be a matter of days, I presume, before the Ballyboden game. We will see. So Semple yesterday was incredible. I just find this part of the season, because like everything is quite parochial until we get out of the counties. Once you get to provincial finals level, especially, things go up a notch, especially when you get the sort of conclusions that we got over the course of the weekend, because Saturday night in Croke Park was incredible as well. Like the headline was written, Ballyhale have done it again, they've won it late on. So for St. Martin's to actually come and not only level the game and send it to, I presume it would have been extra time as opposed to a replay, but for them to actually go and win the game in that context, just like Dingle yesterday, was an extraordinary turnaround. Steve-O, you have the details on this.
Yeah, absolutely. St. Martin's, Leinster club hurling champions for the first time in their history. The Wexford side outlasted the Kilkenny Kingpins. Ballyhale Shamrocks to win the final 24 points to 17. They'll face Ballygunner in the semis, with Loughrea and Slochneil meeting in the other last four clash.
Right then, we have time for a couple of more stories, Steve-O.
Yeah, Louds' Bevan Duffy has retired from inter-county football. He served his native county for 13 seasons and was part of the Leinster Championship triumph this year. Louds' chairperson Sean McLean paid tribute to Duffy, describing him as a colossus for the county over the course of his career. In golf, the LIV Golf chief executive Scott O'Neill is optimistic the tour will secure official world golf ranking points for players in 2026. He's told The Athletic he's hopeful they'll have it in place out of the new season starting in February. And Mary McMorrow is taking on the role of the interim CEO of Swim Ireland ahead of Sarah Keane's departure. Keane is due to join Cricket Ireland and will leave Swim Ireland at the end of January. McMorrow, who already serves as Swim Ireland's Chief Operations Officer, will begin work as interim CEO next month.
Should talk about the fact that we're a swimming superpower now.
Yeah.
Ireland's best ever international meet.
Right.
In terms of success and medals and stuff like that. So, like, Ellen Walsh gold, Daniel Whiff. Oh, it was just brilliant. Like, you know, and it does feel like I heard somebody say, you know, that there's a sense of maybe this coming out of nowhere a little bit or building on the Olympics. But if you've been following swimming or you've been sort of, you know, up to date with this team, this is actually fully expected. And a huge amount of the team that performed and medaled are very young, under the age of 20. This is a competitive sport for Ireland going forward.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I mean, obviously there's a change of leadership there and all now that, like, we hope goes well. But
the other thing, Mick, as well, is outside of the medals,
there up until now, like,
there was a lot of national records beaten across the tour or the meet. So that's another indicator that this is all progress that this team is making.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
The reaction to Mo Salah continues to roll in. If we don't get to your text, we'll get to them in the football show after 9 o'clock. At which stage, Mick, we're going to have to dedicate a good section of the football show to Aston Villa.
I was going
to
say, when are we talking? Hold on, is the news round over? What happened?
I mean, I can't believe it's 7:53. Give us your 30 to 60 second feeling on Aston Villa right now. I mean, it feels like we should start at the end of the conversation. Are they title contenders?
No, I don't think so, but that's fine. I don't need them to be title contenders right now. I am so... just considering where we were 2 or 3 months ago, I'm just so absolutely delighted, because we can get into the details and why I think that the Arsenal reaction is overblown and why they're going to be okay and so on. But from Villa's point of view, they went toe-to-toe in probably the best match of the season, and I thought both teams played very, very well. And that's what I can't get understand. Because other than the Man City performance in, like, what was it, December, a couple of years ago where they beat them, That's the only time I can remember Villa winning one of these big games where they played as well as, or the other team also played well. They were as good as them. And that's just a joy to watch. You know what I mean? When you're at that level and you're like, this is totally sustainable. There could be injuries, there could be squad depth, you know, not getting up for games like Wolves a couple of weeks ago where they were terrible. All that can come. But in terms of facing the big teams, it feels sustainable, you know. So that's where my 60-second thing.
Where's the Buendia moment? Where does that rank in terms of this era of Aston Villa as a moment? For you?
Oh, really high. Like, I mean, there's nothing like a last-minute goal anyway. But I may have done an ill-advised knee slide in my kitchen.
What's the floor in your kitchen?
Wooden, it's kind of sore, but it's okay. Like, you know, it wasn't the end of the world.
Risk of splinters there.
No, it was huge. It wasn't like Troy Parrott-y. But it wasn't that far off either.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because do you know what it had as well, for anyone to see? And I watched it, there's a Villa put up a slow motion thing, which is brilliant on the Instagram. It's like, Arsenal have 3 separate blocks and can't get to the next ball each time. You know, so the first 2 blocks are brilliant, including the goalkeeper save. And then, like, so do you have the, what's made it brilliant was how long your heart attack was. So it was like, you know, so it's like this all happens over the course of, like, you know, a good, you know, 8 seconds, which is a long time in that scenario.
Yeah, and Buendia's on his arse at one stage in the passage of play, and he gets back up and puts it in the back of the net. Yeah.
Amazing.
As I say, we'll get to your text around Liverpool on the football show from 9 to 10. We'll be keeping a close eye on the Manchester United game as things develop. Just one last text before we wrap up. John, hallelujah, you finally talked about cricket. Bet you won't read this one out. Well, the joke's on you, John. But on the subject of the Ashes, you described Australia as massively superior to England. Would it not be more accurate to say that the teams are actually quite even, but England are playing with the mentality of 6-year-olds?
Yeah, I actually think that's a very, very good point. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, John.
6-year-olds.
087-9180-180. Back in a sec.
Off the ball on News Talk.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.